It's a special time in Madhuban. The subject of forgiveness is a good subject to take up with a small group rather than a big gathering in Harmony Hall. Because as I speak, if there are things that you want to share, you want to comment on, don't hesitate, please do interact. The first thing I want to touch upon is the whole subject of mind and health, in the sense that whatever feelings are there within the soul, and mind is that aspect of the soul that creates thoughts, and as thoughts move in a particular pattern, so that pattern creates a feeling. So it's not one thought that creates a feeling, but it's many thoughts moving in the same direction, and that pattern created is then the feeling that we're left with. And the feelings that we have a direct impact on the state of the body in terms of health. And I don't need to go into the evidence of that, because some of you sitting here know more about that than me anyway. But also it's a lot of lokic information that's available out there. You can get access to that very easily. But definitely mind and body, both very deeply connected. And so you have an example like Dadi Janki, nearly 90 years of age, and this amazing energy that really is absolutely due to the power of her mind. Don't ask me how many illnesses she's been through. It's been the whole spectrum. I've seen her leave the body nearly a few times, and yet here she is in these last 3 years, and it's not just a week or 2 weeks that it's been like this. Now I can date it, and it's about 3 years that she's gone non-stop, absolutely non-stop, without a break, without a rest, just going, going, going. You know, everybody else with her will say, okay, now we need a rest, but she'll just keep going. And it's absolute evidence of the power of the mind, everybody's good wishes and God's help, giving her that strength and energy in a very physical way, not just in terms of the soul, but very physically. And why I wanted to mention this at the outset is because I think the whole subject of lack of forgiveness is a subject that impacts our physical health quite seriously. Because there's mistakes that we've made, there's mistakes that others have made against us, and we've accumulated all that stuff. Sometimes it's overt, very often it's incognito, it's suppressed, but it's there hidden away. But those feelings that then lead to resentment and bitterness and lack of forgiveness, all of these things have a very nasty impact on the state of the body also. And so if for no other reason, never mind God, never mind karma, never mind spirituality, if I just want to be able to have a life which is of a quality that's worth living, I want to have a life that's worthwhile, then what I need to do is, apart from a little bit of attention on the body, but not too much, that's another subject in itself, the bhakti of health, and that really becomes a big, big bhakti, must eat this, mustn't eat this, must do this, mustn't do that. It's the biggest bhakti around, in particular within the Brahmin family. It's out there in the world also, but especially within the Brahmin family, you've let go of your other bhakti, but this bhakti becomes a big one. So, you know, just in terms of health, I need to pay attention to my state of mind, to my state of feelings. And so, what is the process in terms of forgiveness? And one thing I've come to realize is that I cannot offer forgiveness to another until I've had the experience of forgiveness myself. As a general thumb of rule, that's also true. Whatever I've experienced, that's what I'm going to put out. If I've experienced love, then I'll be able to give love. If I haven't had the experience of love, then how am I going to be able to share love? Which is what we are seeing in today's world. You know, when you see aggression all around you and you wonder what happened to humanity, what happened to love, what happened to human feelings, and then you look at the background of those who perpetrate violence and you say, but you know, it's totally understandable. What else could it have been? It was almost like you could have predicted that this is what was to happen. And so lack of love and an inability to accept love and an inability to give love. Peace, the same. If I'm never in a state which is peaceful, what am I going to do wherever it is I go? I'm going to create that vibration of peacelessness. And so, you know, all this is true. And it's the same thing with forgiveness. If I've experienced forgiveness myself, then I'll be able to offer forgiveness to another. How do I experience forgiveness myself? Well, the beautiful thing is that when we first come to Baba, Baba's first role is a role of mother. And Baba just simply accepts us. No questions, no forms to sign, no conditions, no judgments. Baba just said, like in today's Murali, child, you belong to me. And it is that role of mother. And it's interesting that the role of mother has been forgotten within all the other theistic religions except Hinduism. The non-theistic religions, well, anyway, that's different. But even the theistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, what happened to mother? You know, really, it's been forgotten. And you can see the lack of forgiveness and the lack of connection with the mother. I mean, I see it absolutely connected in that way. Because when what I'm saying doesn't come from a theoretical space, but from a very practical, experiential space, in that today, if I'm able to experience God's love and God's forgiveness in the form of mother, then I feel totally accepted and I come to God and I'm able to belong to God wholeheartedly. One of the things that people often say is that I feel unworthy to belong to God. And again, it's because there's no awareness that God is the one who totally forgives. And so whatever I am, whoever I am, whatever I've done, haven't done, the sins of omission, the sins of bad doing, whatever it may be, but I come to God and Baba will say, you are my special child, you belong to me. That's good enough. But then, having come to Baba and having belonged to Baba, then I still find that there's things that trouble me from the past. Whether it's trouble in the sense of my own conscience and my own memories, or whether it's troubles in the form of karmic situations that come up, all of that comes up also. Difficult situations as problems with money, problems with health, all of these things come up. And I begin to ask myself the question, well, what must I do to settle all of this so that it does become easy Raj Yoga instead of problematic Raj Yoga? And of course, what happens is that before coming to Baba, I was in the business of accumulation of karma. So I just carried on accumulating without any realization. And there was no thought or aim of settling karma. So although I was accumulating, life was stable, it was fairly comfortable. But from the moment that I say, okay, now I want to settle karma, it becomes a challenge. And so all the past power of karmic accounts come rushing in. and health is affected, wealth is affected, relationships are affected. Brahma Baba, he had the respect of the entire community. And Shiv Baba coming and Brahma Baba starting to follow this path, and instantly the community turned against him. So lots of things happen in that way. And you wonder, you know, what's going on? Everything was okay before, but how come everything's in upheaval now? And the reason that it's in upheaval is because now I'm challenging Maya, illusion, and saying, out, I don't want you anymore. I only want the truth. And secondly, because I'm saying, I'm not going to accumulate more karma, I want to settle karma. So both these challenges means that everything jumps at me. Maybe sometimes a little bit after the honeymoon, when you first come to Baba and you marry Baba, you belong to Baba, you say, everything is beautiful. There's the innocence of childhood, there's the first love and joy of the honeymoon period, but it doesn't last. There's other things that come in the way. And then, anyway, how long can a honeymoon last? A month, 2 months, 3 months? Things change. Then you come to the reality of life. Same thing. We don't know our own sanskaras until we've been along the path of spirituality for a little while. Nobody knows their sanskaras until they've started working on their sanskaras. And to people who normally would have said, you know, but everything is fine, I'm okay, the world is okay, and you think you'll carry on like this, but coming to Baba, and you can carry on like that for a short time, but after that short spell, then the reality of my own sanskars and those of other people, and I can't run away and isolate myself, I have to stay with the family for many very good reasons, and so all the karma is now coming in front of me. And so it's uncomfortable. So whereas, although life was very limited in its perspective before, it was comfortable. We were quite comfy in our cage. When the door of the cage is opened, the bird doesn't want to fly out, which is strange because you would have thought that a bird wants freedom. But no, the bird that's been in the cage for a long time is quite content to stay in the cage, doesn't know what it's like out there, is afraid of what it's like out there, so isn't ready to fly out instantly. You have to encourage it to come out and then fly out. And it's the same thing. We were within our set of bondages, we were within our masks and those limited identities, and it was quite comfortable. Now we're being pulled out of that comfort zone, and so now all these challenges are coming, and I have to see, well, how do I deal with it all? And so when karmic accounts start happening, and you feel a block, and you don't know where to go, what to do, how to move on, it's worth looking at this subject of forgiveness. Because probably what's happened is that through my life, things have happened and I've accumulated that resentment within me. And especially after Baba's knowledge, after coming to Baba, then things that have happened, really, they hurt me a lot more than they would have done 10 years ago or a year ago when I wasn't Baba's child. Because now, with Baba, I'm more aware, I'm much more open. And so I can pick it up when somebody's not happy with me, when somebody's not content with me, and it feels very uncomfortable. And so at that moment first, really, just to start looking at and seeing, well, what are the blocks that are preventing me from going on, from moving further ahead? And you'll probably find that one of the major blocks, there could be any of the others that Baba's mentioned. It could be ego, it could be attachment, it could be greed, it could be anything. But one specific block is the suppression of my feelings. And so there's been things that came up And I've said, oh, but I'm supposed to be a yogi. No, I'm not going to do this. And then you've suppressed it. It hasn't actually been worked out. And so in that suppression, that's where I say there's a huge, huge possibility of the body getting sick. Suppression leads to illness. Suppression also leads to one other thing, which again is now very clearly researched in the world, and that is depression. The fastest growing illness in the world is in terms of mental health. And so depression, loneliness, these come high up within the agenda. And within a few years, mental ill health will have then become equal to the first killer on the earth, heart disease. Heart disease is the first killer. The second one is likely to be mental health. Which again is a bit strange because you don't associate mental health with death except in very extreme cases of suicide and so on. But that's where the world is headed. And so suppression of my feelings, and there's going to be problems that come up in front of me. And Baba doesn't want me to suppress anything. Baba's got another method. Baba calls it cleaning. What I have to do is to clean out the soul, clean out my feelings. And sometimes when we're speaking, we tend to use the word heart for soul, even though this is the physical machine that he was talking about, the separation of, or the distinction between head and heart and feelings and mind and so on and so on. So the feelings that I have, I'm pointing here, because it's the heart that actually feels the pumping increasing and the blood pressure rising and so on. But it's not being generated here. It's the soul that has feelings, and the feelings are then triggering off the responses that are then measurable. Science has to be able to measure everything. If something can't be measured, it's not real, it's not true, it's imagination. And of course then you have to challenge them that, well, the most important things of life are beyond measure. Love and truth and peace, who can measure these? How can you measure these? But suppression and being able to transform it so that then it's not a question of suppressing the ego or anger and so forth, but a transformational process in which my own highest state begins to emerge. The state that is my own natural state of being, of purity, peace and love. Did you know that? Did you know that each and every soul is the embodiment of peace? When you say Om Shanti, that's what it means. So the embodiment of peace, of truth, of love, of purity. This is what the soul actually is. And this is what I want to allow to emerge once again. And relationship with God is the only way in which God's light can reach the soul. And as a result of experiencing God's light, the goodness that was hidden away now begins to emerge and be expressed. So what am I suppressing? I'm suppressing usually negative feelings. When we talk about the original qualities, they're all positive, and yet they've been suppressed also. And the suppression in terms of these good qualities is cultural influence, human influence, body conscious influence, whether it's in the family, whether it's at work, whether it's in your leisure time place, whatever. But there's huge influences working on us to keep us in a negative state. And if somebody's in a positive state, people will say, that's a bit strange, you know, what happened to them? So they don't accept it even as the norm. But But the normal state of the human soul is of goodness and those original beautiful qualities. When I'm suppressing, what is it that's happening? Something's happened and I don't want to deal with it. What is better, suppression or expression? Is it? I'll give you a story. In Japan, many years ago, one of the big companies decided that they needed to have a place where people could express their emotions. And the thinking behind it is that as you express emotions, you become free. Correct? Every time you express an emotion, you underline it for yourself. It's emphasized further. Every time a sanskar is put through into action, there's the external impact, but there's the inner impact. And it leaves an imprint on the soul. And so what they found in this place was that in the basement they had a place where there was a gym, which was great. But then beside that they had a place which was a large room, and it was totally padded. All the walls were padded. The floor was very nicely cushioned and padded. And the purpose of this room, they were told that any time anybody felt any anger, and in Japan they don't usually show their emotions so quickly anyway, so there's a lot of suppression as a cultural thing also. But the employees were told that for their health and well-being, the company has generously provided this space, which was very generous. You know, Tokyo, you pay so much for a postage stamp to stand on. You know, if you've got a tiny little patch to stand on, that is expensive. London also, you park your car and it's like paying with gold, you know, for a few minutes. So in Tokyo, to have a space where there was a place to express yourself, that was quite amazing. And they found that when people wanted to release their anger, they would go into this room and they would punch. They would punch the walls, they would jump up and down on the floor, express their rage. And great, you know, they'd come out of it feeling better. They'd let go. But once they were out, then within a very short space of time, the anger would emerge again. Because every time I express my anger, my sanskar becomes stronger. And so it's not the way that I've expressed, I've let it out and it's gone and it's finished, which is what they tell us in theory, not true. Every time it's expressed, it traps me further and further in that particular pit. And I hate myself more and more, and I lose the dignity of the self totally. And so when there's a sanskar that's coming up, a negative sanskar, to suppress it is bad, it's bad for health. To express it is bad, bad for your personality. So what are you supposed to do with it? Ignore it and it's a problem. You can transform. You can transform it. Say, for example, if I have a sanskara of stubbornness, and every time somebody tells me, you're really stubborn, I dig my heels in more. I'm not going to shift. I'm not going to change. But there's a relationship of love, of trust. And when somebody is telling me something, I know that I trust them. And I know that it's not out of any altruistic feeling. It really is totally altruistic. And I know that, then next step, I'm willing to listen to them. And then I'll take note and maybe I'll learn and maybe I'll change. So the process of transformation on the basis of understanding, whether I do it on my own or I seek help from another pilgrim who's further ahead than me on the path, but suppressing negativity, expressing negativity is not the path of Raja Yoga. Rajyoga says, transform yourself. And so when I come to Baba and after the honeymoon period, I begin to see what my sanskars are like, I say, oh my goodness, this is much longer than I ever thought it to be. But at that moment, firstly, in silence, to be able to look at the self very deeply and see what is it that I'm suppressing. And to be able then to make contact with God, my honesty, in that I want to know what it is I've done. I haven't realized it at the time I was doing it, but others must have noticed it. So let me seek that information to see how others see me and what it is that they're watching. But most of all, in silence, let me sit in front of God. And in front of God, one of the things that happens is that there cannot be any more excuses. To a human being, you'll say, but this, but that, if this, maybe if. But in front of God, I can't say, I did this because of so and so. I did this because this thing happened, that thing happened, the other thing happened. My excuses really dissolve. I can't hold on to those. And when I'm in front of God in those moments, the screen of my mind is broad and I'm able to see the whole journey of my life on that screen. And it happens for people without Raj Yoga teachings. How many of you have come across what's described as the near-death experience? Well, not so many. Well, when people have gone through the point of near death, they've left the body, and there's a classic formula, a classic syndrome. And first step, when they leave the body, they feel that they're out watching the body. An operation, an accident, something traumatic, but they're maybe up on the ceiling, watching what the surgeons and nurses are doing down here. Maybe they're to the side and they're watching what's going on. That's one step. But the second step is the film of their whole life flashes in front of them very, very fast. And then, like they go through a tunnel, and at the end of the tunnel, literally there is light. They have that experience of meeting God and connecting with the light. And they come back from that experience transformed. Much more spiritual, less egoistic, much more compassionate, much more caring. And so you don't have to wait for a near-death experience to feel this transformation. Because anyway, it may never happen. But what you can do is have what's described as a living death and a rebirth. I have life, I'm living, but I choose to separate my consciousness from this. But in that living death and rebirth, I've gone through that whole scenario of everything that I've done. And I very consciously seek God's forgiveness. And the forgiveness comes if there are two things that have happened prior. One, that I've really, really repented. I can't say I'm sorry and then go out and do it again. That's the system of the world today. You know, the word sorry is very easy currency to use. You just say it and that's it. Finish. But it doesn't work quite like that. But if I have the absolute determination that I want to change and this isn't going to carry on anymore, then in that determination, God is able to forgive me, and I'm able to feel God's forgiveness at work. And the proof that I have been forgiven by God, twofold. One, I feel free, without a burden. Whilst I was carrying the load, carrying the burden, I was feeling it, but I didn't know what it was. I thought maybe my physical energy is low. But no, the burden that we're carrying that actually is a signal that something is wrong. And we also then check it out, you know, it's what else are the signals that are telling me what's going on. And so to have that deep realization of knowing what it is that I have done, and then asking God for forgiveness with commitment not to repeat that same error. And God will open his arms and accept you into his lap, and really, truly, God will be able to forgive you if this is what you have consciously sought. And the second aspect of forgiveness there, realization and transformation will bring forgiveness, but also forgiveness happens if first I start with myself. Again, today is really very beautiful, and the way you accumulate sin and charity and how you accumulate the treasures of knowledge and become wealthy, how you're able to settle the sins of the past. So, one step. The realization, the commitment to change, the transformation. The second is, I've experienced God's forgiveness, but to what extent have I forgiven myself? Really, that's a big, big issue now. Can I learn to forgive myself? No one knows me as well as I know myself. No one knows the destiny I have followed that has now brought me here to this path. They know of a few physical external factors, but they don't know the whole story. And so I know what I have done, and I've sought forgiveness from God, but what I now have to do is to also be able to forgive myself. And forgiving the self also means being able to forget. Now that's another very interesting thing, because for God, the three aspects of time are very clear, and so God knows my past, but is able to forgive me, and God is able to focus on my present to give me support and strength. It was a wonderful comment from Baba today that we make effort, but more than our effort is God's effort on us. God is tireless in his effort on us. And so God is continually helping me at this moment. And God sees my future. And God's vision of my future is the highest. And so God is able to set aside my past totally and focus on helping me at this moment, carrying me to my destination of perfection. Am I able to forgive myself to such an extent that I forget the past? Only in that state can I be free. Because every time I remember the past, it's there alive, and it's there within my sanskaras. And again, it emerges in terms of my feelings and in terms of my connections with others. And so God will forgive and forget, but am I able to forget? And so first question about me being able to forgive myself and being able to forget. Without the forgiveness, the forgetting can't happen. You know, sometimes we hear Baba say, okay, past is past, it's finished. And we accept it. We know that that's the only way to live. You can't survive if you're hanging on to the past. And then we say, but how come I'm not able to let go? How come I'm not able to forget the past? And it's because I haven't gone through the process of forgiving myself. And so the forgiveness for the self, whatever it was, however it happened, whoever was involved, no blame, no complaints, I forgive. And then it can be buried, it can be forgotten, and finish. And I'll be able to have clean feelings. Two words that go together in Hindi, and they're very similar in sound, and they come up in practically every single one of Dadi Janki's classes. Safai, sachai. You know what they mean? Safai, clean. Sachai, honest. And until Dadi explained it and I began to think about it, which comes first was not clear. But in fact, what is very clear now is that it's the cleanliness first. Clean out, clean out, clean out, clean out feelings, clean out other things. Then after the cleansing, then there can be the honesty. Because the reality is that until I'm clean, I think I'm being honest, but I'm not. I am seeing things from my own perspective. I am seeing things from a very narrow frame. I don't know. And so it's only when I've cleaned myself and I have nothing but good feelings inside of me, then in that clean state, then I can say, okay, now this is the truth. I can see it clearly. And so there is honesty there at that point. And so to forgive myself and forget means to become clean. The forgiveness, that's cleansing. The forgetting, that's making things really completely clear and clean. Then the question comes of forgiving others and also seeking forgiveness of others. There's a very interesting comment that Dadi made after Baba's Murali of the 4th of September, because in Baba's Murali, Baba was talking about don't just teach others, but also have feelings of forgiveness. Teaching others in the sense that somebody's made a mistake and so you think you have to teach them. You know, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, why did you do this? And so Baba's point there was that, yes, sometimes it's necessary to point out whatever it is, but also you have to have feelings of forgiveness. And so with that, then you can, when you've forgiven somebody, then with those clean feelings, then you can also teach them and say, but look, this is how it should be. If you haven't gone through that process first, then you just simply teach them. They're not going to listen. They're going to reject it because they feel your negativity coming to them. And then they're quite likely to say, well, it's not true. It's not really like that anyway. They'll justify something else because they're reacting to your feelings. And within that, Dadi had a very, very interesting comment to make. She said, how can God forgive you unless you've sought forgiveness from the people you've given sorrow to? I've given you sorrow, and I ask God for forgiveness. Well, it's easy to ask God for forgiveness, but to have the humility to come to you and say, I'm sorry, and I seek your forgiveness, that takes a lot of humble pie. And if I'm not ready to come to you to seek your forgiveness, there'll always be that burden that I carry. And a burden means no yoga. Again, very interesting. We often complain about how we really would like to have yoga, powerful yoga, and we're not getting powerful yoga. It's not happening. Why isn't it happening? I think I'm doing all the things I should do. How come I'm not having good yoga? And there's a burden. And if the soul is carrying a burden, it's the antithesis of yoga. Yoga means to be light and fly. Burden means I'm pushed down. Gravity is pulling me down to the earth. And so the burden of their pain that I have caused, I'm the cause of their pain. So I'm carrying that burden still. And so how can I fly? And so first I have to also seek forgiveness from people I know I have caused sorrow to be free from that burden, to be able to start having yoga. And of course now people are so scattered across the world. Sometimes people who you were connected with the other end of the planet, you've lost touch with them, there's no contact with them. But at least hold that image in your heart, in your mind. Put them in front of Baba, and in front of Baba, seek forgiveness. And you will feel that the burden is removed. And when the burden has gone, then yoga becomes possible. And so that's when I have sinned and I seek forgiveness. What about the other side of the story? I've been a victim. And they're the ones who have perpetrated the wrongdoing. And so what do I do about forgiveness at that time? Some time ago, when I was reflecting on this subject, there was something very, very interesting that I realized at that moment. Because the situation was that here was this person who had done things that were quite wrong, partly against me personally, but not so much. More it was against the Yajna. And you can say, okay, forgive them. But you know, in the whole process of forgiveness, I also mentioned about transformation. And transformation means that there is no more sin. If I've transformed, I don't repeat the same mistakes. And in this case, I was finding forgiveness quite difficult because the mistakes were continuing. The big ones had stopped, but the manipulation, the lies, the deception, I got to the point where I began to think that this person is sick, that they don't even realize that they're speaking lies. And I said this to them at one point, are you sick? And I didn't mean that in a sarcastic way, because you know, I thought really there was something that was damaged in their brain or something that they didn't even realize that, because they said everything is fine, everything is fine, everything is fine. But the lies were continuing, the deception was continuing, the manipulation was continuing, all of this was carrying on. And so I thought to myself, but you know, if somebody is ready to transform, then you can forgive them. But in this case, it's ongoing. It's now today. And it'll probably carry on tomorrow and the next day, but it's here and now at this moment, so how can I possibly forgive? And I realized then that it wasn't even my jurisdiction to forgive. My responsibility. Within the system of the law of karma is that they have done what they have done, they're going to receive the return of whatever it is they've done, and that is in front of God. God doesn't punish them, but God is the judge in front of whom they come and acknowledge whatever it is that's happened. And karma and the return of karma comes automatically. And so that's happening for them anyway. And it wasn't up to me to even forgive or not forgive. I was not responsible. And if I say I don't forgive them, I'm carrying the burden and the pain and the memories. And if I say I forgive them, then my burden is removed. My feelings become good feelings, pure feelings, which is good for my spiritual progress and my physical well-being. But it's really they and the Creator and the law of karma. I don't have anything to do with that. And if I think I have something to do with that, I'm tangling myself up in their karma. And I've got enough of my own to try and settle without getting entangled in the karma of somebody else. And so when I understood this deeply, that it wasn't even my place to forgive, I just simply had to let go totally and know that it's in God's hands. And even that, the quality of feeling is interesting. Because, you know, you can say, oh, it's in God's hands, and you're still angry about it. But you know you can't do anything about it, and so you're just saying, oh, well, it's in God's hands, whatever happens is destiny. But it's with anger and rejection that I say that. My karma is already entangled because of this. But the moment that I say, it's in God's hands, I'm cool, I'm detached. God is responsible. I can't be responsible. No way, it's not possible. It's in God's hands. God is responsible. And when I accept this totally, then in that state, yes, I'm free. I'm not creating any further burden on them so that they are free too from my side. But that was very interesting, that a human doesn't really have the capacity to forgive. We're not in the position of forgiving. But yes, to be able to get it away from my heart so that it doesn't cause me any further pain or burden is what Baba's teaching me. So, forgiving the self, forgiving others, seeking forgiveness from others, seeking forgiveness from God, all of these are part of that story of forgiveness. And when there is a person who is forgiving, then it means that they don't repeat that situation to another human being, just a supreme judge. But God's role is just simply to give us realizations. And it's not even just at the end that that happens, but her sense is that the karmic return is accelerated so much that everything is happening very quickly. And if I don't seek forgiveness, how can I have yoga? How can I prepare myself for the coming times? But in forgiveness, then, the heart melts and is open. And because the heart is open and generous, cooperation comes very easily and naturally. When I came back in 1974, I'd surrendered and then come back to London in 1969, then the centre started, and then in 1974 I was in India again, and Baba sent me with Daddy Janki. So Daddy Janki came to London in 1974 at that point. And one of the things that had been in my own mind had been this whole subject of that, how is it that, you know, you can settle all the things of the past? And one of the things that Daddy said very early on at that time is, just keep making sure that you don't add anything to your karma now. And three lists to keep in front of yourself. One is, have I done anything which is adding to my karmic account? Two, did I use my time, my energy in a worthwhile way to do good karma? And three, just a checklist of how much more still remains. And the visibility of what still remains is your sanskaras today, the problems that come up in front of you today, the challenges in relationships today, all of that is an indicator. And one is to settle through yoga power, the sweetest way, lots of yoga and the karma is settled. One is, have I done anything that's going to add further to my karmic account? Have I done good things which is adding to my accumulation of good karma? And third, how much more of the past still remains to be cleared? So those three things. And then the way that settlement works, realization and yoga power. Secondly, the suffering that I'm going through now, whichever way it's coming, whether relationships or physical body or financial troubles, whatever, but it's all a settlement of karma that's also happening in that way. And the last way is by realization in front of God. That is the most severe. Why? Because Baba has been giving me so much love, and this is what I want. I want to receive God's love, and I take drishti from Baba, because that gives me that feeling of God's love. So in a very practical way, Baba has been playing the role of mother, father, friend, guide, teacher, and so on, and is helping me on all levels, with a lot of love on all levels. And yet I haven't taken that. And when I come in front of the Supreme Judge, that part of giving love will be merged, and the part of being detached will then begin. And I don't want to have to face that. I want Baba's loving drishti, not Baba's detached drishti. And so let me do whatever it is I can to settle. And so yoga power is one way of settling. Transformation of my behavior is a second way of settling. I really, with determination, decide to let go of anger, so that there's absolutely no anger anymore. The past will be settled. And the third is to do lots and lots of good karma. Your thoughts, your words, your actions, your wealth, your talents, everything, everything, everything for God. And the more you do this, the lighter the burden will be. There's an example that Adi Gulzar gave of an image that Baba had shown her in trance. You know, those old-fashioned scales. You have two pans and you hold it in your hands, or it's hanging from somewhere. And the first thing you have to do is to make sure that the center point is straight. Then the reading will be a correct reading. And so intellect clear, straight. Attachments, desires, and it's going to get pulled. So clear and straight. then on one side is my bad karma, on the other side is my good karma. And if I keep adding to my good karma, what will happen at the end of the day? It'll be the plus. It won't be the minus, it'll be the plus. And so Baba's now showing us ways in which to settle karma sweetly, happily, with love. But if that doesn't work, the soul anyway has to be purified and cleansed before it can journey home. And so there will be that settlement at that moment. I see the story of my lives, and the soul suffers at that moment for whatever it has done. It's an inner mental suffering. It's not boiling in oil or being thrown to the alligators, but it really is just that realization and repentance. But of course, repentance that moment is too late. What can repentance do? Everything has to be settled by then. And so then, having settled with God, then the soul is able to journey back. So those were the thoughts that I wanted to share on this particular subject, especially because it had come up in the recent Murali, but also because I see that it's a topic that's very needed at the present time. If I'm to give nothing but blessings from my heart to others, I need to make sure that my feelings for all are very good. Then blessings is the next step, at least good feelings today. And if I haven't learned the art of forgiveness, my feelings won't be clear, won't be clean or positive. Any questions that anyone has? Not yet, it continues till today. And so it's also an indication for me that forgiveness mustn't be done with that expectation of change in them. Because the question was that when I changed my attitude to the person who'd making these mistakes, did they change? And they didn't. They haven't changed yet. But the forgiveness is still something that I have to continue with, because it can't be based on expectation or conditions. I've forgiven, now it's their destiny. Whether they change or not change is their business. Yes, Baba mentioned this. Baba said that it was very interesting in the Murali on the 4th. Baba said that if you continue to see them with that vision, you're reinforcing that sanskara. But if you forgive and let go and see them in the highest vision, you're empowering them. You're helping them come up to that stage. And that's absolutely true. I have seen it work on that level also. But in this particular case, it's very, very severe. And so it still hasn't changed. What about when you're not aware that you're causing sorrow to someone? It does happen, because sometimes it could be the other person who's so ultra-sensitive that you've said something very simple and yet they've taken a lot of sorrow from it. And so in that case, I don't think it's my responsibility. And then I don't say to them, I'm not bothered about you because it's nothing to do with me, it's you. Because that's the worst thing you can say at that moment. And it'll really get them very, very upset and negative. But it is a fact that I can maybe only just give good wishes and nothing else. And so just let them be. Lots of love and respect for them, because when a soul is in a state of depression, then they don't know how to pull themselves out of it. But an atmosphere of love, an atmosphere in which they are given respect, will help them open their eyes a little bit, and empowering them with Baba's love. It's true that many people in a state of depression don't actually acknowledge that this is what it is. Other people will say, but these are classic signs of clinical depression, but the person in that state won't acknowledge. Yes, that's very true. That, and especially in the West, when people live on their own, then, you know, they're continuing with a particular pattern and they don't realize that that's what's happening. There were two times when I took up the subject of depression in London in the last few months, and one was literally just the day before leaving India for India. And I was with Dr. Sarah Eager, and Neville was interviewing both of us. And so one of the things that was coming out very strongly was how the lack of a support system in the West in particular. In the East, to a certain extent, it's still there, but it's quickly fading. The extended family system and culture of the East is also falling apart now. But until recently, it held good. And so that support system could see when somebody's behavior was out of sync. And then at that moment, love, attention, counseling, just within the family. You know, there'd be a grandmother, an aunt, or an uncle who you could go to. And so it happened in a very natural way. Today, in the East also, it's breaking down. In the West, it's non-existent. And not even nuclear families survive any longer. You know, 20 years ago, you'd say, well, the extended family has gone, now it's nuclear families. But now in London, there's more single-parent families than nuclear families. So even that has fallen apart. And so in that condition, there's nobody who can pick up on somebody's behavior and say, hey, this isn't going the right way. There's something wrong here. It needs attention. It's not happening. And then not just to pick it up, but also then to give them that support and help them come out of it. So within the Brahmin family, and it's probably more prevalent than one would think, because you come to Baba with a lot of baggage, you follow the path of Gyan, and you continue to make mistakes. I mean, that's the reality. And so all of that is really creating that burden of depression and then more mistakes. You know, in a depressed state, you don't have real clarity of right and wrong anymore. And so maybe you're continuing to give sorrow, maybe you're continuing to do wrong things and you don't even realize it. But the support system of the Brahmin family is so important. And within a small center, on the one hand, it's easier to provide that support. On the other hand, because everything is so much more visible, it's more difficult, more challenging. But in a large center, you need to have people who are very empathetic, who will help others, because, you know, like in morning class in London, we have 300 people. Now, who notices who isn't quite as they should be? It needs a lot of perception. It's not a question of allowed. You know, it's like, you know, when I've got a cold, Daddy's words to me are, why did you get a cold? You know, it's not a stigma, but she'll still say to me, but why did you get a cold? And of course, I'll think about it and I'll realize that I let tiredness get to me, and tiredness isn't a physical state, it's a mental state. And then it leads to the physical condition. You can be doing a lot of work and not get tired. And so, A, I might have let tiredness get to me. I've allowed my immune system to go down. And immunity is connected with hope. The dadis and their enthusiasm and hope and their immunity is strong. You know, so there'll be a reason for it. And, you know, but her first question to me is, why did you get a cold? Or I'm coughing. Why are you coughing? And at first I used to say, Daddy, you know, it happens. And then I began to think about it. So again, depression. Let me explain another thing. I mean, the topic is forgiveness, but it's sort of come up. Too many waste thoughts. Now, I wouldn't say this to the people out there. I didn't say it in my public talks, because already stigma has depression has a stigma attached to it. And then if you tell a person, well, it's your own waste thoughts, they really think you're putting them down. But within the Brahmin family, where we understand about thoughts and the power of thoughts, It's very interesting because two psychiatrists, one psychiatrist said that, well, one of the signs of depression is where, you know, they've come into a stupor where it's like they're not thinking anymore. And yet the other psychiatrist said, because that was, I knew for a fact that too many waste thoughts lead to depression. And so I positioned it as a question, is it a possibility? And one psychiatrist said, no, because the condition is a stupor. But the other psychiatrist said, but why did that stupor come? It came because of an over-excitation of the mind and too many waste thoughts, and the exhaustion that resulted from the waste thoughts led to the stupor. And when you see a depressed person who's lethargic, then you see the stupor. But that's not how it started. The starting point was, for a fact, too many waste thoughts. And there's amazing research that's being done in terms of brain waves and how very fast anxiety, worry, depression, next step. You know, you carry on letting yourself being anxious and worried over a stretch of time and you get to depression. And so negative thoughts, negative thoughts. Here's Baba giving me everything. Baba's not holding back anything. And I'm not accepting it because my mind is too busy. I'm having too many waste thoughts, negative thoughts. And so it's led to that state. Next stage, ordinary thoughts, the normal human condition, 30,000 thoughts a day, that's on average. And so that's another brain wave. Another brain pattern is, you know, that's the alpha pattern. Then the next, where is it? I've forgotten the names now. I'm getting it. Yeah, but it doesn't work like that. It doesn't go as alpha, beta, theta. There's a different sequence. I'll come back to you and tell you about that. But there's one state which is the ordinary condition. I think that's beta. That's beta. Then there's another state which is the alpha state, in which you're beginning to focus, beginning to concentrate. And this is the doorway to the theta. And the theta is where now you're focused. And then you're getting to the delta. And in that state, then, your mind very, very calm, very, very slow. And so that state of silence that's been described, that state where there's very, very few thoughts. And so what Baba's teaching us is to get to that state of silence. But it's not an empty silence, it's not a vacuum. But it's a very rich, full experience. But it's experience, it's not just thinking, thinking. And the other extreme, the anxiety and the depression, very fast. So it's not a question of permission or not permission. When I have such a clear picture of what's going on, I mean, today's Murali was wonderful, but every day's Murali has beautiful things. But today, where Baba said, knowledge means understanding. And understanding leads you to follow the path of happiness. And when you're able to take power from God, you fill yourself with the power of happiness. Now that's the power that God gives you today, the power of happiness. And so use Gyan. Gyan is giving me such a clear picture. And on one level we would say, I believe. This is why I'm here. I'm Baba's child. I have faith. But the faith that I have, you know, there was this gorgeous Murali, Avyakt Murali, about 2 weeks ago. The Hindi words again rhyme. Sunna, manan karna, magan rehna. To listen, to churn, and to be absorbed. And so we all love listening to Gyan. It's such a stimulus and it's such a breath of fresh air to hear the truth. But is it still just the listening and the speaking? That's where Baba spoke about Varnan, speaking. And so, yes, we enjoy it. But deeper, the churning. And when you're churning, Daddy said it in her talk yesterday, Or maybe Devi Gulzar said it in her talk. That's right, both of them referred to it in different contexts, that where there's waste thoughts, it's many. Where there's pure thoughts, it's few. And so the speed slowing down with the churning. And Baba saying that many listen and speak, for that's your bhakti sanskar again. In bhakti, you've enjoyed listening to the stories. And so now you come into jnana, you again still enjoy listening. But take a deeper churning. And that requires alertness. And one of the things that's been described as one of the vices is laziness. And laziness not in the sense that I'm just sitting down, well, it might be that, but laziness in the sense of my intellect and inability to use jnana to keep my mind active and engaged. And so let me churn jnana. And as I churn, I come into the experience. I'm absorbed with it. And in that experience, it's not churning anymore. I am that. I'm feeling it. I'm being it. So there's lots of reasons why depression comes or lack of forgiveness and all of this, but start using jnana by thinking about jnana deeply. And as I think about it, I'm using it in my life. And there's a change. Very safe. There was a time when I practiced for about a year just checking my feelings. Are my feelings pure feelings, good feelings? And if there's anything that's making me feel not good, if there's any trace of bad feeling that's coming in, why? And to track it back and sort out my perception. I can't change the situation, but I can change my perception of it. And so pure feelings, then you can start having good feelings for others, but at least let my feelings be pure feelings first, good feelings. And then, yes, there'll be good wishes. And yes, it's a safe measure. I've probably started you off on more things that you need to think about, which is fine. Okay, last question. Is it safe to? No. Meditation is not possible for them. Depression and meditation don't go together. And there's a state of clinical depression in which you need professional help. Now, I'm not talking about that. But just within the family, that we see that somebody, you know, is feeling a degree under, they're not as happy and cheerful as they used to be. I can see that difference. The last thing they can do is meditate. Give them a broom to sweep Baba's house. Difficult. Depression and concentration is difficult. And so karma yoga. And it's classic because, you know, one of the stories that many of you have heard, I'm sure, and, you know, Baba, Mama, Shiv Baba, and now the Dadis, they knew all these things instinctively. Nobody sat and told them, and they didn't go on the internet to read about it. But they knew it. So when somebody was a bit grumpy or discontent or not quite happy, and so Mama would say to them, okay, go clean the kitchen. Literally. Or when somebody would say, I'm not able to have yoga. Again, Mama would say, go do something. And of course, today we know that exercise is one of the ways in which the chemicals within the brain that actually create the good feelings, serotonin and all of these things, they actually secrete it through active work, exercise, physical work. And also just doing something in Baba's house, and the power of good karma comes back to you. It helps you. Okay, let's have a few minutes of silence. And yes, tonight, the yoga bhakti. So take that opportunity every evening for a good stretch of yoga.